There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, my name's Nick.
Hello, I'm Woogie.
We are the Mouth of Manliness. This is a podcast all about mental health. But it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Woogie here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth of Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. Welcome back, everyone. It's me, Nick, here, and this is...
It's me, Woogie. How's it going? I hope we are well.
Yeah, good, isn't it? It's exciting. We're very excited today because we're going to do a big live podcast tomorrow at the London Roundhouse.
We are.
In front of quite a lot of people. It's quite exciting.
We've been scheming away about what we can chat about. And it's most likely going to include some of what we talk about today with our lovely guest.
Yeah. So it's Matt Sinkovitz. Is that right? Did I say it right?
That's perfect, brother.
Hey. Yeah. Welcome, Matt. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Appreciate being here, gentlemen.
Yeah, man.
So where are you?
I'm in the U.S. I'm in the States. I'm in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is the capital of Pennsylvania.
Amazing.
Sweet. What time is it there?
Right now for me, it's 2:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, okay. Cool. Not too bad then. Not too bad.
How about you guys?
It's like 7:30 here.
Yeah, this is why there's beer and cider on our table.
We have a few drinks. Not working tomorrow.
Nice.
Brilliant. Sounds good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this. This is... actually quite a fascinating topic, really, and it takes us into realms that we've never been into before. So tell us what you do then, Matt.
I'm a porn abstinence accountability coach, and my basic work is I'm also a mindfulness counselor, but my basic work is to help men that are dealing with pornography addiction navigate their way out of that prison, which it's very much a prison for a lot of men. Mm-hmm. And find their way to long-term freedom from pornography addiction.
So it's fascinating, like kind of before we came on the air with you, we were kind of talking about it generally, weren't we? And just like the concept of porn addiction, I think, is probably quite a strange one to a lot of people. But I don't know. For me, I could see how that would happen.
Yeah, and, sure.
I've worked with in my previous job, like I was a probation officer or a parole officer, and I used to work with a lot of sex offenders, and pornography was often really closely linked to their crimes. You know, like really, really closely linked. So I could see where that comes from, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I've been quite familiar with the sort of the notion of people that use narcotics and then using pornography as a way of keeping their brain active, and therefore that being linked to the first addiction of narcotics, to then to then go on to have like a weird sort of I don't know. It's like they become surged. They're together. Yeah. So it always leads to like a lonely narcotic use to then go on to delve into pornography as a form of keeping that high longer, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's something that's been discussed sort of with certain people throughout my life. It's quite interesting, and it's something to I'm really quite keen on discussing, really.
Yeah, a lot of our guys that we work with in our program and in our community often talk about this association between drug use, whatever it is, alcohol, drugs, and pornography. Often they go hand in hand. One often leads to the other.
So tell me, how did you come to work in this field then, Matt?
Well, really through my own journey and my own journey out of pornography addiction. Right. And, you know, I've been on the personal and spiritual development track for over a decade now. I'm actually I'm an ordained Buddhist minister and mindfulness counselor. So my studies are deep in the Buddhist tradition and mindfulness and meditation work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I've also been involved in around the coaching and personal development world for several years. And as I've kind of grown as a teacher and kind of doing my own work and finding, as I mentioned, my way out of pornography addiction in my own life and having to go through my own professional help and get a coach and go through the community. And it's one of those things a lot of people deal with or attempt to deal with on their own.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of recognizing what it took for me to find my way out and recognizing that so many men and women deal with it really in the shadows of life. It's a private battle. It's a battle that's got a lot of shame around it. And so, you know, my coaching and personal development work just kind of came together with my own personal journey and wanted to serve, you know, other men that are going through the same thing and just knowing that a lot of men are dealing with it, you know, very lonely, you know. So that's kind of how I came to the work. And
I mean, I just think about the shame that's associated with mental health, like my own shame of being, you know, hiding my mental health problems. And yeah, of course, porn is up there, isn't it, with, you know, something that you just don't really talk about or, you know, it's very private.
It is, certainly.
So being able to talk to it is key.
I think there's definitely an association oftentimes between porn and mental health issues.
Yeah,
you know, I think they feed each other as well, it seems.
And potentially how they affect the other people in your life, right?
Oh yeah, man, for sure.
Because then I suppose something that sort of is very very noticeable in sort of today's times is that because of the access to imagery that is so visceral and graphic, and it is very much, to put it bluntly, about fucking, not about being part of a relationship. It's really interesting talking to younger people and even seeing how their relationships are and them openly discussing having sex, being almost to a base level where young people don't kiss anymore. Like, they just get in and they've got this visceral graphic image of exactly what they like. And because it can be seen immediately, it's becoming a normal in relationships that sex isn't something that two people find one another's like nice spot. It's a replication of imagery that they've seen, right?
Yep.
And I've had several conversations with people about it, and it's like, yeah, man, like it's sort of taken the romance out of it a little. And I think because it is so, like, there's nothing wrong in exploring fetishes and things that you like, but having that as a prefix to like being with somebody, like, I will only like you if you wear this certain thing or do this certain thing that I've seen on TV. It's sort of, that alone brings on it's a total other mental health angle, I think, because that you're immediately ostracizing other humans that you could potentially have a really nice time with or just have a friendship with because of this sort of thing in your life. And I think that's it's a massive challenge for someone to go through as well. And I think we're finding that with younger people these days, to be honest. Just from conversations I've had with people that are openly into watching porn, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, I don't think, in that perspective. But it depends on how it's used, I think, and it's exploring why, which is obviously where you come in, you know.
Yeah, so how does it get them, Matt? What's if someone is addicted to porn, what does that look like?
Well, okay, that's good. So like maybe how would you maybe identify if one is addicted to porn, or if maybe what someone would self-identify, what might that look like?
Yeah.
I think some of the common qualities, one, is it something you've attempted to quit? Maybe you kind of recognize for whatever reason it's not healthy for your life, it's not healthy for your marriage, it's having kind of adverse effects in different areas of your life, and you've tried to quit, or you've made this commitment, and you've been really clear at times to say, I'm not going back to that, and yeah. You continue to find yourself back there, you mm-hmm. know? Or if you continue to return to it and you are noticing these adverse or negative impacts in your life, you're noticing it's having an effect in your marriage or your sex life or at work or your energy levels, or maybe you're feeling really spiritually disconnected, which happens with a lot of people, or you're feeling a lot of shame around it or social awkwardness or even sexual awkwardness around it. Mm-hmm. Another one I think is something, a great indicator, if you find it's something that's kind of a regular part of your life, but you're having to hide it,
right?
You know, if it's something that you kind of have to sneak away, you know, in your relationship, in the bathroom, at night, you have to hide it from your partner. If your partner picked up your phone and kind of went through it, and you know, there'd be an issue around what they might find. So I think that's another one. Is it something you're having to hide in your life is another indicator, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting though, because I think most people would hide, like masturbation, most people would hide it.
Yeah.
Well, or is it, what? Yeah and no though, because I mean, it's something that you do alone, right? And it's not necessarily the same as sex either. It's another thing. So, like, in relationships, I've sort of spoken quite openly about it. It's never, like, I think it's how you approach it, and it's for what reason, if it makes sense, I guess. I don't think that thing in itself is the issue in some way. I think it's more why and when. If that may, I don't know.
Maybe there's something about frequency.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, frequency is a big one. Now, the thing is, I don't think the reason I kind of mentioned those couple kind of ways to gauge is because, you know, some guys come to me, you know, and they're maybe looking at porn and masturbating 7 to 10 times a day, sometimes in extreme cases, you know, just totally depleting themselves. But some guys, you know, it's less frequent, but it's still an addiction. Maybe they recognize it's unhealthy. So maybe it's only a couple days a week or once a week, but they still are really clear that it's unhealthy, and it's something that at some point they've decided they didn't want to engage anymore, but they continue to return. They've got this compulsive relationship with it. So frequency is one way to gauge it. But again, I think those other two, is it something you're having to hide regularly in your life? And is it also something you've told yourself you're not going to do anymore, and you continue to return? Those are pretty good indicators there as well.
Certainly, you know? Are.
Yeah.
So how do you go about helping somebody?
Well, it's really quite a complex thing, you know. It's really dealing with this with deep psychological and spiritual stuff and emotional stuff, you know. A big part of our process is really getting to the root relationship of pornography. For a lot of us, it started with early sexual trauma or early sexual exposure to a sexual experience, maybe, or early exposure to pornography. And people have adopted this relationship with pornography, much like someone might adopt a relationship with food or cigarettes or drugs, right? And they're continuing to attempt to meet certain needs and to cope with life through their sexuality, and specifically through the outlet of porn. And you know, obviously some people, their sexual dysfunction, it may manifest in pornography, but it also may manifest as other forms of sexual, you know, dysfunction, such as infidelity maybe, or something like that, you know, compulsive sexual relationships. So really getting to the root of that relationship with pornography is a big piece of the puzzle. You know, learning to identify what needs we've been attempting to meet by going to porn, how to meet those needs in healthier ways, learning how to be with our emotional state, to deal with these emotions and impulses as they arise, and sit with them, be with them. But there's also a lot of other work that we do around it, because what we find is it's really about transformation of the man. So that's really what we're all about. We're about much, much deeper transformational work. So our work is a lot about mindfulness work, learning to be more aware and conscious of thoughts and feelings as they arise in the mind and the body, and how those thoughts and feelings manifest into action. And that kind of speaks to the impulse control. But we're also, we have this theme, this idea that says, in order to break a habit, you must make a habit, you know?
Yeah.
So much of our work is about helping men, once they've established pornography abstinence in their life. What do I do with all this time? What do I do with all this energy? Yeah. What do I do with all this space now?
Yeah. I used to work in addiction a bit myself, and there was an acronym, ALOS, but essentially saying that if you, the addiction is filling a hole of some sort. There's a why, and then there's the addiction. And then if you give up, then you've got this massive hole in your life that somehow you've got to fill, because that was really good at filling your time and your faults.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to just to tie on to the end of that, just a couple more just little ideas. Another big piece of our work is, I think within a lot of addiction work, maybe you can relate to this, Nick, is a sense of hopelessness or a lack of purpose or a lack of vision in life, you know? Yeah. I found in my own journey with pornography that there was a real hopelessness. I didn't have a clear vision for my life or what else I wanted, or maybe I had it, but I didn't believe it was possible. Yeah. So the name of our coaching organization is Porn to Purpose, you know? So a big part of our work is, and I think a big part of the long-term recovery process is helping men connect with a greater sense of purpose, a vision for their life, a why, a reason to get out of bed in the morning. If I'm going to say no to porn, what am I going to say yes to instead? You know? So really connecting with that. And also think a lot of the work we also do is really helping men connect with their higher sense of self, with a greater sense of integrity, with a greater sense of nobility. You know, what kind of man am I really called to be? How can I cultivate a better relationship with that man and be proud of that man looking back at me in the mirror? You know, and what life am I really called to live, and tying back into purpose? What am I here to do? You know? And so these are all different components of our process. But I think all crucial in the long-term abstinence journey.
So how do you come to how do people come for starters? Like, this stuff is, I think it's useful for a lot of people. You know, like, these are real kind of, basic, I don't mean it in that way. I mean, like, core things, you know, that can really help generally, I think. And especially, say, kind of, like, being able to sit in your emotions and recognise your emotions and kind of be with them rather than them taking over or going straight to anger because you don't know what your other emotions are, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So emotional literacy is like so important. So I just think a lot of the things you're saying are like really good things generally, you know, like they're really, really useful things. The purpose thing that's massive. Like, to be able to bring someone to a point where they can feel they know where they're going and what they want. I think that's tough. That must be really tough to get people into that position.
Well, it's not for the right ones, you know, not for the right guys. And we're always looking for the right quality of guy. We don't bring just anybody into our program and our process. We're really looking for the right qualities or certain qualities. But so many guys, you know, like with one of our students right now who's approaching, you know, 6 months porn free, and he's in his 50s, you know, he's had his relationship with porn for over 30 years, you know. Yeah. And whenever we first talked, you know, kind of getting clear on why he wanted to do the work and why this work was important to him, he's a husband and a father. He said, you know, I just want to be the man that I know I'm supposed to be. I want to get back to my true self, you know. And so that's there. I think that's there for all of us deep down. Maybe we've forgotten about it, or we've ignored it or suppressed it for a lot of times. But what we do is once we are able to help gentlemen establish abstinence, that stuff begins to reemerge, you know. And that's why throughout the duration of our full course, we're really working on helping them tap into a greater sense of why, a greater sense of vision, and that idea of purpose. Like, who do you want to be? Like, what life inspires you? Like, what's an idea that energizes you and makes you want to get out of bed in the morning? So that's all very natural, in fact. So we just kind of help them naturally find that and reconnect with that themselves. And it's beautiful to see a man come from the depths of pornography addiction to living a more full, engaged, inspired life. And now he's pursuing this greater vision for his life. You know, it's very natural, actually.
But I think also that kind of taking that thing, if someone's able to take that thing out of their life, then they're able to be kind of more present. Kind of that's the mindful thing, isn't it? To be kind of present and just to experience things as they are without something else taking you somewhere else.
Yeah.
and that's really tough because everything takes us everywhere else all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like life is naturally quite. We're constantly being grabbed for our attention, whether it's social media or, and that can often lead to sort of, you know, you can go down a spiral of in anything, like sitting watching YouTube as opposed to porn, or for like hours and hours and hours and hours. It's like it's so easy to do that shit because it's forced upon us. So literally our sort of natural callings are constantly being sort of attacked, if you like. So it is down to us to actually have a little bit of support and to engage with the right people, and then and therefore like the right, I don't know, like the right encouragement to sort of find yourself. And like if you're a creative, it's really easy to just go, no, I'm going to sit on my ass today or whatever. Yeah. And it always takes like a conversation to say, did you finish that tune? And so you're like, no. And it's like, I really should. And it's like someone sort of gives you a little bit of encouragement. But then it's strength in numbers, isn't it? So then you go out and have a conversation with people, and everyone, and then the minute you realise that everybody is sort of in the same slump, if you will, and it might not be an addiction per se, but that it's still a journey that you need help with. And I think encouragement and actually having a community there to sort of help encourage the best part of you, which is what good friends do, actually. And then, you know, life's never too short to make even more friends, so it's... It's an inspiring thing, I think.
It's interesting, actually, because when I was the stuff you sent me, and I saw like the community element that you have, like the Facebook group, then the idea of community. So then people don't feel, you know, like I've got a problem, but I'm not the only one. So it takes the shame out of it.
Yeah.
Because there's a group.
Mm. Yeah, that's exactly it, man. You know, as I mentioned, you know, pornography is one of those things that we deal very much isolated through our lives. Because, I mean, just being a human being in the world today, there's a real taboo nature around sexuality. You know, it's hard to talk about for whatever reason.
Yep.
You know, I don't know where we went off course there, but you know, the most natural thing, the thing that's the reason we're all sitting here today. You know, but there's a lot of shame around it, and especially sexual. We'll just say dysfunction, you know, these sexual things that we kind of get into, man. There's a lot of shame, and and people do not feel the freedom to seek help for it, certainly not to talk about it. A lot of times someone might have a hard time talking to a partner or a friend or even someone they're close to because of that shame. So, getting it, and so you feel very alone in that journey. Yeah. And so getting into community and recognizing that you're far from the only, you know, far from alone in this journey, and a lot of people are dealing with it. I think it gives you support, that camaraderie. But as you mentioned, I think it kind of neutralizes a lot of that shame. You know, we can begin to take something which has kind of been festering in the darkness for much of our life. We bring it into the light, and we take back our power, and it's very empowering.
It's interesting. You know, like you said, often it's like, what was the initial experience with porn?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from, and why? And then, you know, quite often, you know, it's like with mental health, like where something happened usually years ago that happened and took you on this path where things, you know, that just made you unwell. And I think, as you say, you know, if it becomes an issue, then it's serving a purpose, and the purpose is probably started many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to that kind of root cause. I know for me, kind of like going through therapy, that kind of really, you know, like I thought I knew, but then you're going through a lot of therapy, and after a while, you're like, it's something else.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was that, but there's more to it than that. And then that's the beginning of healing, you know, and that's the beginning of getting better, because then you can kind of reconcile a bit, and you take that kind of self-blame out of it. Oh no! You said something else that really kind of really resonated with me. I should write these things down.
Yeah, we should.
So, what's the process then, Matt? What's the process? Because you said like 6 weeks. So, do you have a program?
Yeah. We have a 90-day program that we take our guys through. It's called the Liberation Boot Camp. Our goal is to get all of our guys actually to a year porn free.
Yeah.
We think once we get our guy to a year porn free. And we've also worked with them and helped them establish this new kind of philosophy, this new way of being, this new way of living. And really, I think a year porn-free and doing the deep work in that space really helps the man make the identity shift, which is so necessary. We talk, you know, we talk to our guys who just kind of recognize, I can recognize in my own journey, you look back to that time and that's, you're just, that was a different version of you, you know, and you no longer identify with that older version of you anymore. So yeah, we have a 90-day process, and then we have an extended kind of support program that we then lead our guys into, to get them to that 1 year porn free. But yeah, it's a 90-day, very intensive. It's a group, it's direct work with me, and then it's their own work on their own for that 90-day period. A ton of accountability, a ton of community, really going deep, and also establishing those new habits and ways of being. Yeah.
Right. I can remember what it was. Identity. Like I quite often find myself coming back to identity, and many people I've worked with and spoken to over the years, it's so much is about identity and that lack of kind of understanding the self or knowing who you are. So you, because you don't, you struggle with your identity, or you feel like your identity is bad in some way. That you then try and kind of master that identity, often with substances, often with, like porn, you know, it's something else. And the idea of trying to build up identity and kind of help people to find their identity, I think, like, that's got to be the key, isn't it? I really love that. I love that you do that, because I think that's so, so important.
I think it's really interesting that there's clearly, like much with any sort of addiction, there's a process that one goes through. Like I associate sort of my addictive nature, like when I was using a lot of like drugs and stuff, and it was always obviously to try and make myself feel better. But there's a process you go through in order to do it. Like you get drunk, you do this, you do that, and you find yourself in a point on your own. And I think I can certainly see how. Again, like finding yourself alone in a room where you can then, you can use a device to find something that you know that the endorphins are going to flow in your brain. And it's that process I find fascinating, because you have to go through steps to get there, to get gratification effectively. And you know it's wrong in your own head.
But that's that ritual of doing. Element of most addiction. Things are quite often as good as, if not better than the actual thing.
Yeah.
But you're around the money, yeah.
Yeah, right, of course.
That's what we like.
Of course it is. It's the idea, the ritual.
I think about my issues with substances and things, it's more ritual than anything else. And there's also an element of debasement.
Yeah, of course.
That feeds that I don't like myself. And I'll debase myself in some way. And I kind of quite like that.
Yeah,
because I'm that shit. It's like that self-destructive element.
I just find it's interesting you said about like replacing it and replacement being the key. It's like it is the same thing of like you can literally type you tube or porn, right? and you could watch a shitload of comedy. You could watch Bill Burr. You could like, you know what I mean? You could really enjoy that, or you could watch you porn and then find yourself feeling debased and disgusted. And it's like that sort of approach or idea is no different to the fact of walking into an off licence and picking up a bottle of Evian or a bottle of wine. And then if you drink those two bottles of wine, then making a phone call and so on and so on. So it's encouraging to hear that, I don't know, that it is literally about identifying the alternative, right? Mm-hmm. And I find like that, I think something I'm quite curious about to ask actually on your journey, and obviously not to name particular cases or anything, but with the type of pornography watched, is that something you have to deal with, like on a potentially sort of, because I mean that can be quite a dark place in terms of sort of what people watch. Okay, so like, and I think we're familiar with that, like, you know, in terms of sort of paedophilia links and things that are quite aggressive sort of things and so on. So, I mean, have you had cases where you've had to work with other people in order to ensure that these people are safe and safe in their own headspace, and they're not going to, I don't know where I'm sort of, what my question really.
Oh, okay. But, yeah. So if for example, if someone was watching a lot of porn, that might be the thing that, although this doesn't normally happen this way,
no,
it might be the thing that would stop them going out and committing a rape, for example. Is that what you mean?
No, I just mean sort of the visceral nature of it. If it's something that disturbs you as somebody that works with somebody else. So like, yeah. If you're working with an individual and if something they choose to watch, like, do you go into that far detail is what I mean. I think
we do, but we don't spend too much time there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm typically aware of what they're getting into, just because it there's some indications there. For instance, as you mentioned, Warren, you know, it can get really dark.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And that's the nature. Like, it's not just Playboys today like it used to be.
No,
you know?
Man.
And I think that's one of the issues. I mean, there's no end to that bottomless pit of pornography. Yeah. You know, it goes deeper and deeper and darker and darker. And that's where guys really find themselves in this place of like, how did I get here? You know,
because they're just
looking for that more extreme thing, that next dopamine hit. Like, you got to go further and further, just like I think with any substance, you know,
exactly.
You're looking, you got to go deeper and deeper. But like one thing is like, say a guy kind of finds himself in the world of like the whole domination thing, you know what I mean? Or punishment, you know? Again, I think there's a healthy side to everything. That might be a healthy part of someone's sexuality where they like to explore the roles and the polarities and how that all works. That there may be a healthy expression of that. I'm sure there is, in fact. But I think whenever the shadow aspect of that comes out and we find guys that are really kind of getting into the maybe the dark side of that, and maybe they're dealing with self-esteem, self-worth, shame issues, and they feel that they're worth less and they don't deserve, and that's kind of being expressed in their sexuality, and they prefer a boot on their head maybe or something like that, and to be tied up and bound and punished. Now that could have deeper implications, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And deeper implications in terms of our general sense of worthiness and deservability in the world. You know what I mean? And do I even feel as though I'm deserving of something better or deserving of freedom? You know. So there are implications there, and I think maybe porn genres can be an indicator as to what maybe some deeper underlying issues. You know, so that would be helpful to know.
I think what's interesting, like. I think the type of person you are potentially, and this is quite a lighthearted look to it, but I mean, in terms of like what you may search for, I think it's an indicator of like when you're younger, something you experience, something you like, and that often would dictate. I don't know. It could be that you just like girls with brown hair as opposed to blonde hair, right? So you would naturally type in that, I think, because that's your preference. I think like. You've got to get yourself into a place as you get older, I think. Well, like, because again, like having fetishes or other things, I think is quite a normal thing. You know, if it's explored in a way where, you know, no one's getting hurt, because you can find communities where some people like certain things, and that is okay. But like, I think it's interesting how the human mind works. In that you'd rather be punched in the face by someone wearing a leather costume than have a cuddle, right? So, but it stems from, I mean, we've obviously said it a few times, but it must stem from a place where the more exposure you get. And I just find that massively interesting, like just because it can just be something you like, but it's just that deeper push, isn't it? Like into your own headspace. I mean, it's you that does it, though. So you're doing that to, like, you're. I don't know. I just find it fascinating how we as individuals get ourselves into that. I think I do. It's quite the journey. I feel
it's psychology, isn't it?
Yes.
Why people do what they do, and I guess that's kind of a key to what you do, Matt. Is the whys? Why are you in this position? Has a negative impact on your life. But yet you keep doing it. That's addiction, you know. That's what it is, and why? I find it. There's a Manic Street Preachers song when there's a line in it when it says, "My idea of love comes from a childhood glimpse of pornography."
Yeah.
What song is it? And this idea that love is porn. It's not. You know, it's not gentle, it's not caring, it's not loving. I've worked with stopped working with like kind of teenagers, and they really, really look down on someone who would like fellate a woman. Like that's really bad, that's really wrong, you don't do that. And
someone who would do what, Nick? I'm sorry.
like cunnilingus. Like,
oh, go down on a woman is what you're trying to say.
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to be posh, but they're like they look really down on that, and they see that as being awful because that's not what men tend to do in porn.
Interesting.
And the general acceptance like of younger women that like they haven't done a good job if the man doesn't come in their face.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And like that's,
I mean, what world do we live in where that's a thing? Do you know what I mean? Like,
that's really, it's sad, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Well, that's what I say, man. You know, so thankfully me, when I was introduced to pornography, it was a more innocent age. You know, we had just gotten a computer in the house. That was a big deal. And, you know, it loaded slow and you could get some still pictures and maybe you could find a video, but not like, and like my introduction to pornography was my friends out back in the clubhouse showing me, you know, Playboys and penthouses, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't in our pocket phone, you know, and it wasn't these extreme genres. That was just endless, 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 you know? So thankfully I was introduced to porn from that perspective. And my relationship with porn still got out of hand, you know? But I feel like these young kids who are growing up with these iPhones and with these phones in their pockets and just instant access to the most extreme stuff. And, you know, not only I think are their sexual tastes and preferences probably being morphed, but their expectations, as you mentioned, are being formed in this way, especially if they don't have a healthy like mentorship from their parents, you know? So yeah, who knows what, you know, 20 years may, you know, down the road may look like. Also, I've got a stat pulled up right here in front of me.
A recent
study showed a 400% increase in ED or erectile dysfunction among men ages 18 to 30, you know?
Is that right?
Because of this early exposure to pornography.
You're having sex, but it's not like porn. So
yeah, so it's desensitization, right?
Yeah, it really is, and
therefore the expectation of your partner isn't that of what you see, so you get less excited.
Yeah.
But it's that thing of like, I mean, not I don't want to talk too graphically, but I remember sort of being a teenager and like, you know, seeing a girl naked for the first time and being like fucking hell, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. This is the best thing in the world ever. And I couldn't ever dream of like being as old. I know I was kind of young, but like, you know, but like at the same point, like now it's so different. Like, as you said, like iPhones, and this is the thing that is what worries me, man. It's like, you know, and people used to say when I was a kid, if you play like Grand Theft Auto, you're going to go out and assume that you can like steal cars sort of thing and that. And it's like, not quite the same, do you know what I mean? But I think the problem is with like relationships, we want to be in relationships, we're bred that way, regardless of like the sexuality of it.
We are attracted
to people, and it's a natural thing to want to have sex with somebody. So that thing is like, that comes more or less before, pardon the pun, sorry, it comes more or less before like anything else in terms of your, when you start liking somebody, you then start liking how they look and you notice things. And as you progress, that excitement is totally fucking gone. And it doesn't surprise me, actually, that, because I think sort of that youth culture now, in terms of exploring their sexuality, is not brought forward as such. I quite like the confidence in it now. People don't like to be defined by, they're much more open. And it may well be linked that, like, they're linked in sexuality, whether they're like, or identifying as how they are, could well have been informed by the fact that there's so much stuff out there that it's better just to shut it out and just decide actually what you like, and to be encouraged that whatever you like is okay also.
So it's
kind of like, I think potentially a subversive way of it, and more of, and a progression actually as well, because sexuality is less of a problem, and therefore if you decide to shun the visceral nature of like heterosexual porn, which is tends to be like, I mean, from my knowledge, of course, tends to be like the base of it.
Submissive woman.
Yes, exactly.
Powerful man.
Yeah, but that image hasn't changed since
the 70s.
That's
interesting, actually. Like, I've quite often think about these things as being linked to like early attachment. And but then if you think, like, I imagine that it comes a point with a lot of men where if they're not feeling secure in themselves, they are feeling lost, they're struggling with their identity. You know, that element of porn, that kind of me man, you know, submissive woman, that fulfills an element of need.
Yeah.
you know, like that. And sometimes I go back to attachment. It's, you know, maybe that, like, if you didn't have a secure attachment when you were growing up, that's you feel a need to fill.
Yeah, I see that.
Significance is one of the words, is one of the needs that I've heard porn fulfilling, a sense of significance.
Right, okay. Right,
yeah.
But this is not obvious, you know, oftentimes this is not obvious or apparent. This may be something that we have to do some deeper exploration and you know, digging to kind of realize, like, oh, I get a sense of significance when I go to pornography. But that's not why we go to it necessarily, you know?
Yeah. But like that's so that's like a byproduct of it, is that you feel significant.
Is it? Do you explore the fact of obviously it being a physical? Because obviously masturbation is directly linked to watching porn. So, is it a sense of sort of physicality with an emotive? Like that is a, I don't know how to put it really. Like the emotions that you would typically get from having a partner, if you're not fulfilled by them, or you are single and alone, and then therefore. The physicality of doing it whilst somebody else, in inverted commas, being in the room, is that explored often? Because again, like from loneliness, because you can still be lonely and with somebody in a relationship, right?
Yeah.
Sexually, yeah. I mean, as well.
I just want to maybe make sure I understand your question.
No, just because it's a physical thing.
Yeah.
So it's like replacement. So you're replacing a partner. Yeah. So
I would say so.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I would say, you know, so what I kind of talked earlier about, oftentimes we go to pornography or whatever the drug is, right, to fulfill certain needs. And so a big part of our work is, what needs have I been attempting to meet by going to porn? One of those needs is definitely connection, you know? And you look at, I mean, sexuality is an expression or a means for connection, you know?
Yes, of course.
Our sexuality is also an expression of love, you know what I mean? So a lot of times I think that's what people are looking for, connection. Yeah. And for love, man, you know?
Yeah. And that's a really good place to come from, really, because it's what we all crave in one way or another, right?
I mean, such a big part of our work as well is also, you know, self-love, you know?
Yeah.
You got to find that within yourself versus trying to go outwardly for it. So that's a big part of our process as well.
Matt, my favorite thing.
Yeah.
The idea of looking elsewhere to feel better.
Yeah.
And elsewhere is not where better is.
No.
Yeah, brother.
Better's inside.
Yeah, of course.
And I think like that speaks to most, like, addiction pretty much as a whole, really. Like, you're looking elsewhere to try and make things better, or a substance to make things better, when, there's a gap in you.
Mm.
That's why I like what you're talking about, because it's very much about, like, filling that gap and trying to get people to a point where they are happy with themselves and they are happy, they're confident in their own skin. And, you know, and I think, like, that's the answer more often than not.
Yeah.
Like, if you can feel fulfilled in what you do every day, like the small things, if the small things, you can find beauty in the small things...
I think that's very true.
Then there's your answer. I really think that.
But you achieve a sense of calm, don't you, once you've come to terms with things. Like, I got some really good advice a little while ago. I mean, I meditate when I can, but, like, one of the best things when I wake up, and I've started to do it, is that you get up, but when you wake up, you sit on the side of your bed and you just sit for 10 minutes. You just sit and you open the day up that way, as opposed to, and I can't always do it because I'm riddled with anxiety often and I'm a bit ADHD, so this is just sort of what happens. But you get up and then, but the best thing about it is that then you can sort of take gratification in the small things. Like, I mean, it might sound silly, but actually achieving to wake up, make breakfast, clean it up, put it away, get your papers out, not like go, and just do everything sequentially. To find happiness in it. Because when I do it, when the evening's done, I'm not like rushing to get to the pub or rushing to go out. It's a sense of calm. And it's like you seem immediately calm.
You do.
And you do. And that's, it's just from your natural being, quite frankly. And it's, that is a lovely thing, you know. And it's something that I mean, I've always kind of liked and idolized as what I will have. And I have it on certain days, but... It's funny, I think, when you deal with the stuff, like the stuff that's just there, because that clarity is so important, isn't it?
I'm really, last year, we had a guy on who studies Buddhism. And there was so much in what he was saying just really rang true.
Yeah.
It was just like these real kind of simple messages that just made so much sense. Yeah. It really did. Do you mind talking about that for a little bit, Matt?
Yeah, sure. Is there anything in particular that you'd like to touch on there?
I tell you, one of my favourite things was the not looking to be happy all the time. Is that this idea that you're always going to be happy is quite unattainable. Mm-hmm. So it's more about trying to be content.
Yeah.
Which I really loved that. I really did. So how did you come to that area, Matt? How did you get into
that path of work?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I'm 38 years old. I was at age 25. I found myself in a place of just deep, dark depression and just really suicidal, you know, just obsessive thinking and feeling and unhappy with myself and just, you know, just a young kind of lost man, you know, and just didn't want to live anymore. And I remember I had this moment of awakening or awareness when one day I was sitting at this job, which I was unhappy at. I just kind of woke up to the idea that, you know, and I was feeling very much a victim to my mind and to my thinking. And I had this moment of awakening, and I just kind of recognized that, okay, if I can see and recognize these thoughts that I'm having, there must be another part of me that can observe these thoughts. So maybe I'm not my thoughts. Maybe I'm not my feelings, but I'm having thoughts and feelings, and I'm identifying myself with them. That was kind of my moment. And I just had this little glimpse, like a little door, a little sliver opened up for me. And I just kind of had this little moment of insight. And whatever that experience was, I can still see myself sitting at this desk now. I began to explore my mind. And I went to the bookstore that night. I was living away from home. I went to the bookstore that night, and I picked up a couple books on mindfulness, meditation, Buddhism, and a book by a guy named Dr. Joe Dispenza, who was all about learning to rewire our brain in the ways that the way in which our brains worked and our the neuroplasticity of our minds.
Yep.
And I just began digging, and that was my path. And really, it was for me. I was trying to save myself, and I got into meditation, and I began my meditation practice at that time, learning to create space between my thoughts and my feelings and my greater self, you know, and learning just to create, just trying to find some peace in my life. That ultimately led to me to deeper studies in Buddhism. And I ultimately began studying with a local Sangha or, you know, Buddhist community for regular meditation. And that led me to my teacher, who I began studying more deeply with. And they had a seminary there for, you know, for deeper work in mindfulness, and meditation and mindfulness art and mindfulness counseling and ultimately a degree in Buddhist ministry. So I did that, which is interfaith work, you know. So I did that to really deepen my own studies, my own path, and it ultimately led me to the work that I do today. I started off early in my life. I grew up in a Christian household and doing work with my parents in missions work, prison work. And so my work now in Buddhism, and my interfaith work, which is kind of just a portion of the work that I do, has led me to interfaith work in hospitals and prisons. And I actually take this work, mindfulness and meditation, into prisons. Mm. And I do you know, meditation and work with the men as a spiritual advisor there as well. So that's kind of how I got into the Buddhist stuff. It was really just trying to save my life and my sanity and find some way out of my mind, you know, ultimately.
So inspiring,
you know? Despair, really. Despair. Yeah. Takes you somewhere. Like, if you are at a point of despair, I know I've been at a point of despair many times, and you get to a point where you're like, I will do anything to stop this. And one of my big turning points was, like you said, that realization that, hold on, I can actually be separate from my thoughts. I tend to say, like, your brain's not in charge, you know. Like, you can be separate from your faults.
One of your taglines.
Yeah, and it's really hard. It's really, really hard. But you have a glimpse, and then you're like, oh, there's something in that.
Yeah,
exactly.
That it's not in charge.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so cool. And what I also like is Buddhism's not. There's no it's not like other religions. It's there's no telling anyone. It's all about you, and that's
more psychology. Rare. I think, philosophy for peaceful, peaceful living is what I found it to be.
And I like. I think people often kind of like they struggle with the idea of mindfulness because they feel it's they'll be like, oh, it's a bit new agey hippie thing, but like mindfulness essentially is like Buddhism, isn't it? It's totally in that realm, and it's about just being able to be still.
It's essential. Mm-hmm. It's literally essential to live in this crowded mental space that we are in every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a post sort of COVID pandemic stuff that because people have been forced to be at home, and that in itself obviously brought a lot of negatives energy there. But the one thing about it you're noticing is people tend to be more at home with their own thoughts, and therefore there's a positive outcome in that. I don't know, there is a subtle sense of calm. It's less of the rat race situation in town at the moment. It's getting back to what it was because people are allowed to, in London this is, but there is still a noticeable difference, and people are that little bit slower, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because it enables us to shield the negative.
Yeah, people
right?
are a bit more, I think if people are a bit slower, then they're a little bit more aware.
Yes,
yeah.
And it's that thing, take a breath. And I'm guilty of totally not doing that, but when I do it enhances everything. It's that little bit of calm, right?
It's quite interesting. I hope you don't mind me asking. Did when you kind of found Buddhism, did that conflict with you growing up in a Christian household?
Not to me, but to my parents it did. Because I'll use this term very generally, but from the outsider's perspective or someone who's not gone deep into those studies, you're taught, generically speaking, that anything outside of Christianity or whatever your given faith tradition is very often is of the devil. There's something inherently dark and evil and bad about it. So for me, Buddhism complements, I think all faiths and all traditions. And I don't think there's any conflict if you really go in and do an honest investigation, if you're willing to do so. Yeah, but from the outside, I think people do see a great conflict. But yeah, I mean, I don't worship Buddha or anything like that. I think he was a way shower, much like I view Christ. You know what I mean? And uh-huh. I think there's a lot of beautiful teachings in the Christian faith as well. Yeah. And a lot of parallels. So I don't see a conflict, but I think a lot of people do because they have not done the investigation.
Yeah, I guess. I think there's that kind of. I kind of get quite into this stuff. So you go back to the Greek philosophers, and their idea of was very much about the self, and Buddhism is kind of more about the self. Whereas often, on the face of it, a lot of religions are more about the outwards, else. And that's why Buddhism kind of resonates with me, and the idea of it being about you getting to a place and you can control how you think and what you do.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's about learning to be our own savior and our own salvation, and going inward versus looking for something outwardly, which we already touched on today. Mm. I'm very much a student of theology, and. In my own personal studies around the teachings of Christ, even I believe that's more Christ's message, is that we are our own saviors. It's not looking outwardly for our salvation; it's learning to go inward for our salvation. Yeah. That's where it is, and that's the message of Buddhism as well.
Stepping out of the general dogma and actually kind of thinking about it. The idea that you're your own savior. I totally that rings a bell with me all day long. I like that. I like that very much.
Yeah, brother.
Oh, Matt, it's been great.
Yeah, man.
You're such a superstar. I really enjoyed that. It's really made me think about things.
Yeah, I love the drawing the parallels to other conversations we've had, and it's lovely to hear what you're doing for people. Yeah. It's incredibly encouraging, and your sense of calm is wonderful, buddy.
I love that.
Yeah, man, you're doing it well. You're doing it well.
But just the general parallels with a lot of the things we talk about like all these, a lot of the things we've talked about in this last hour, I think are really, really helpful for us generally and helpful for us all and our mental health. Like, just generally, I think we've kind of covered so many important points.
Yeah, we have. It's amazing. Where can our people find out more about you, Matt, and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. So we have a support group online, private support group for men only. They can find us on Facebook at makingpeacewithporn.com is the name of the group. Uh-huh. And we're doing a lot of work. We do challenges in there. We got a ton of, we talked today about community and accountability and an opportunity for men to open up and get into dialogue around this stuff and not be alone in this journey. Uh-huh. So yeah, we've got this place and it's very much, you know, as I'm an interfaith man, an interfaith space where we honor all faiths and all traditions and we just respect each other and create a safe, loving container to come in and do this work and have these conversations. So that's what the community is about. There is, and if you're looking for more direct or immediate support, you could always just email me at makingpeacewithporn@gmail.com.
Cool.
It's also like you sent me a download for a book as well.
Yeah, there's a download. I don't know if you can include it in your links or how you guys
try
do
to.
That. Yeah, we have a free download. And it's called the Freedom from Porn Accelerator. It takes men through a lot of the, through a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, getting more clear on the why, starting with the pain that we're finding ourselves in currently, what we want to be moving toward, where do we want to go differently, what's the vision for our lives, and also creating greater levels of awareness around the needs we've been attempting to meet by going to porn and how to meet those needs in a healthier way. It's a guide that we walk guys through, and we do training around, and I sent you that link, so however you want to supply that for that
I'll
freedom.
Try, if I can share it, I will do. I'm sure I can.
That's
really, really cool. Thank you, Matt. I really enjoyed that. You're a superstar. Yeah. Thank you for coming on and being our guest. That was great.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you, man.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you.
Big love.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.